رحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. This is session 20th on the rest of lesson 16, and inshallah then we will start lesson 17 of the book Philosophical Instructions. In the past session we had a brief study of positivism, and we mentioned some of the criticisms against positivism. Our discussion today is related to the issue of priority of sensation or intellect. So we want to see which one is more fundamental and more important, which one underlies. There are different ideas among Western philosophers concerning the priority of sensation or intellect. And they discuss this issue in different ways as well. For example, regarding the order of occurrence of sensational knowledge and intellectual knowledge, regarding their value, and also maybe in other aspects. What is here important and what will be discussed here is the issue of priority of sensation or intellect in respect to ideas, and secondly in respect to affirmations. If you remember, we mean by idea here at-tasavvur, and by affirmation at-tasdiq, and we had discussion about these distinction between at-tasavvur and at-tasdiq before, and also about different elements involved in tasdiq. So we don't need to repeat those discussions. So what inshallah we will be doing here is to see separately, independently, whether sensation is prior or intellect. First, in respect to ideas, and secondly, in respect to affirmations or propositions or qadaya. Of course, we mean here by affirmations or propositions at-tasdiq, which is to some extent different from qadiya, but in many cases they are the same. First of all, the author gives us some short introduction to the issue, and then in the following lessons we will discuss them in more details. So in the remainder of lesson 16 we will have a very quick review of the priority of sensation or intellect in respect to ideas and in respect to affirmations, but then we will have separate lesson on each of them. Those who believe in priority of sensation believe that the main and the original and the primary source of our knowledge is sensation. Whatever else is only a change, an alteration, a combination, a generalization, or at most abstraction of sensational knowledge. So intellectual knowledge is nothing other than a sort of change or a sort of putting together or generalizing or abstracting some sensational ideas. So they deny, in this sense, priority of the intellect. They also deny that there is something different in nature, something which is not just a combination or abstraction or generalization of sensational knowledge. They deny the existence of such a thing. The people who are empiricists, the people who are positivists, usually have this idea. And if you remember, we had also a group of people who were denying the existence of even universal concepts. Not only they do not believe that intellectual ideas can be different in nature, but also they deny their existence. So this is something that, inshallah, we will talk about it more shortly when discussing about lesson 17. The other issue is about priority of sensation or intellect in respect to tasdiqat, in respect to affirmations. So the author says that those who believe in priority of sensation believe that whatever judgment we make, whatever affirmation we have, is only a matter of experience, a matter of seeing something, for example, outside, observing something, and then putting that into a propositional form, putting that as an affirmation. Our intellect can have no independent judgment. Our intellect may later come and make some judgment, but it is only when we have already some sensational knowledge. So every intellectual knowledge must be preceded by sensational knowledge. Every intellectual affirmation must be preceded by sensational affirmation. On the other hand, there are some people among Western philosophers, some rationalists, like Descartes. I'm not saying that all rationalists are like this, but some rationalists like Descartes, they have the idea that there are some intellectual affirmations which are not preceded by experience or by sensation, and they call them innate ideas. Of course, here by idea they don't necessarily mean ideas in the sense of tasavvurat. So they mean there are some innate, there are some natural, some nature-given knowledge which exists in our mind without any need to experience. Of course, there is a more articulate, more deliberate account of this idea which says that there are innate affirmations which may need some sensation or some experiences to awaken us about their existence. So they are not caused or originated by sensation, but when we are born, we don't have them in actual form, and we need some sensation so that those can come into scene, those can come active, become active. Anyway, what the ideas of Descartes was this, that there are certain ideas which are part of our nature. We are created with these ideas. We are given these ideas by God. And for these ideas, we do not need any sensation or any experience. So this was to refute the idea of empiricists who believed in priority of sensation. And the other thing is that impresses themselves were not always the same. Some of them were saying that all our affirmations are either sensational or preceded by sensational, and they meant by sensational just the ordinary knowledge which we have by five senses. In other words, they only meant by experiences, external experiences, experiences of the world outside, by seeing, by smelling, by feeling, touching, by hearing, and so on. But there were also some empiricists who were prepared to accept the existence of internal experiences, spiritual experiences, mental experiences, maybe you could call it, in which you experience something inside yourself. And that is a sort of knowledge by presence, like experiencing the feeling of joy or feeling of sadness or grief and so on. So they were not always the same. This is a very short idea, a very short introduction to the issue of priority of sensation or intellect in respect to both ideas and affirmations. Now let's start lesson 17, which is a more deliberate, a more detailed account of priority of sensation or intellect in respect to ideas. So now we want to focus on this and discuss it in more details, and then inshallah later in another lesson we will talk about this issue of priority, but in respect to at-tasdiqat, to affirmations. Okay, so now let's just focus on ideas. The author says that we mentioned before that Western philosophers have different views. Some believe that we have some ideas which are created by God inside us. Those are innate, those are fitri, and these ideas are not in need of any sensation or any experience. For example, the concept of God Himself, the concept of soul, nafs, or for example the concept of figure or continuity or extension, al-imtidad, these are some ideas which are not taken, which are not derived from sensation, which are not derived from sensation. He was calling these primary qualities or first qualities, and Muslim philosophers call it al-kayfiyatul ula. In Arabic we use al-kayfiyatul ula, primary qualities or first qualities. And these ideas, which are understandable only by reason or intellect, are in contrast to secondary qualities which can be understood by our five senses, like for example a smell, like for example color, like for example taste. So he was very clear in distinguishing between these two sorts of concepts, and he had the idea that primary qualities or first qualities, because can be understood by our intellect, so we can have certainty about them, we can be sure about them, we can be free from doubts about them. But secondary qualities, which are based on sensation, are not immune from doubt or suspicions, so they are not certain, and we may make mistakes. So we are not sure whether we have, for example, a feeling of something being in a special color or a special smell or tasting in a certain way, that we are really making good, right, a truthful judgment about that or not. I mean, for example, whether that thing really has this quality or not. This quality even may not exist at all in reality outside. The color that I feel may be not really there outside. Maybe no such a thing as, for example, red color for rose flower. So this is the idea that Descartes had. So this was an attempt by Descartes to say that our knowledge is not totally based on sensation, and we can have certainty, at least in respect to some sort of our knowledge. Another example of rationalist philosophers is Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher. You are already familiar with some ideas of Kant. Kant had the idea of certain categories being imposed on the way that our mind works. So his idea was that our mind does not just receive from outside. Our mind is not passive in full sense, so that just receives the ideas from outside and then evaluates them, examines them, investigates them. No. He had the idea that the structure of our mind is built in the way that it receives something from outside but also adds something else to it. So we have something from inside being imposed on the ideas that we receive from outside. For example, he had the idea that time and space never exist outside. We don't have anything as time, zaman, or a space as makan outside. These are two categories of sensation that our mind adds to the things that we understand in the material world. Our mind dictates that everything in the material world must have a time, must have specific space. But there is no idea, no reality of time or space outside. This is something which is imposed, which is added by our mind. So this is why there can be no mistake in correspondence between our mind or our mental understanding and the reality outside. But why there can be no mistake? Because we know that it's only in our mind. So he has solved the problem of how to make sure that our knowledge corresponds, or some of our knowledge corresponds to reality of the world, but by changing the problem and by making part of our knowledge subjective, in a special sense, of course. Of course, for Kant, the issue of subjectivity and objectivity is different from the issue of subjectivity and objectivity for other philosophers. He has a new idea of objectivity now. So for him, objectivity is a mixture of what other philosophers take to be objectivity and subjectivity. He also had the idea of categories, 12 categories of our mind in respect to the non-material ideas. And in the book there is an appendix or an enclosure of a list of these 12 categories related to four dimensions of each affirmation. And because it's something not really related to our issue, and it's more for personal study, so I'm not going to discuss them, but it's very easy, and you can very easily follow it in the book. Just I mention very brief points, but I'm sure that you yourself can study it. For those who are more interested in the transcendent philosophy of Kant, on page 136 of the book Philosophical Instruction, you find there a list, a table, the table of the categories. You see that there are four dimensions: quantity, whether a proposition is universal, so that it's about all individuals, or is particular, about some individuals, or singular, it's about a particular person. So sometimes you say all men are, for example, mortal. Sometimes you say some men are, for example, scholars. Sometimes you say, for example, so and so. For example, you say Mr. Ahmadi is so and so. So you have three different ways to have a proposition in respect to its quantity: being universal, being particular, or being singular. The second dimension is about quality. And here we mean by quality whether the proposition is affirmative, positive, or negative, or it's infinite, in the sense that negation is taken into the predicate itself. Like, for example, for affirmative we say man is mortal, for negative we say the spirit is not mortal. So the first was is mortal, the second it is not. And for infinite or oduli, we say the spirit is non-material. So you see the negation, non, is taken as part of the predicate, non-material. So instead of saying that the spirit is not material, you say the spirit is non-material. So these are three different sorts of quality. And then about relation. The relation may be categorical. For example, we say God is just. So we have subject and predicate, and we say that this subject has this predicate. Maybe in conditional form, or as translated, in hypothetical form. Like, for example, we say, if God is just to people, he will give rewards and punishments. So you see that we have a conditional phrase, and then we have the reward or the result of that. And it may be disjunctive. For example, we say that Byzantium was the greatest nation of ancient Europe, and there is unfortunately a missing point here. Byzantium or Greece was the greatest nation of ancient Europe. So there is here a sort of doubt, a sort of, you could say, flexibility. You don't say this was, for example, the greatest. You say Byzantium or Greece. This Byzantine or Greece, certainly one of them was the greatest. But the speaker does not know or does not want to mention it specifically. So they, this or that. So the whole point is going and evolving around these two. So this is related to the third dimension, and that is relation. And fourthly, regarding modality, there is lots. There are lots of discussions about modality in logic. We don't want to discuss about them. But anyway, we mean by modality the quality of the relation between subject and predicate. Sometimes a subject has a predicate in a necessary way. For example, we say that human being is mortal. So mortality is necessary for us. But sometimes it's in not necessary way, but maybe there, maybe not there. For example, we say this man is a doctor, or this man is, for example, a chemist, or this man is a religious cleric. So to be a doctor or, for example, chemist or religious cleric for human being and for this man is not necessary. This is something which may or may not be as a quality for a human being. We may achieve it, we may not achieve it. So the relation is sometimes possible, and possibility is the relation of between predicate and subject. Sometimes it's necessary to negate. For example, man being immortal. If you say man is immortal, or this person is immortal, so necessarily this is not the case. For us, necessarily we cannot be immortal. All of us die. Of course, when we die, we do not disappear. We will not be totally destroyed. But this is something that happens to our physical life. So this is the idea of modality in a very simple way, I put it. So regarding modality, again, there are three things that Kant mentions. So he makes sure that everything has three different forms. I don't know whether really all of these can be just three. Perhaps because he wanted to make it more beautiful. This is something that sometimes happens in philosophy. That some people, like for example the idea of Hegel, making everything in a trilateral relation between thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So here Kant has four different things, and every one in three subtypes, so all becomes 12. So regarding modality, he has problematical, he has assertorical, and also he has what is translated here as apodeitical, but maybe you could say also certainty. By problematical, he meant when something may be or may not be what is mentioned as its predicate. So for example, when we say some planets may have living things on them, so this existence or life of living things on those planets is something that we are not presenting it in a certain way. We say maybe such a thing exists and may not. We don't know, or we don't want to say anything to the person who is listening to us. Maybe the speaker knows, but he does not want to put it in a certain and decisive way. So this is when there is possibility and we don't know for sure, or we don't express at least for sure. Sometimes we are sure. For example, we say the earth is round, so we are sure and we express this certainty that earth is round. And sometimes we say that there is not only a predicate for something, but also we want to add that this is necessarily proved for that subject. Like God is necessarily just. So God is just and must be just, necessarily just. But in the case of the earth is round, we are sure that earth is round, but earth is not necessarily round. It could have been created in another form. So certainly it's round, but not necessarily. Like, for example, we say, certainly this person is a doctor or is a cleric, but not necessarily. So you should distinguish between certainty and necessity. Necessity, as I said, is a modality, which means that this predicate is inseparable from the subject. But necessity is different from saying that I am sure, I am certain. You may be certain about something which is not necessary, about something which is possible, like being a special sort of human being. Being, for example, fat, thin. Being, for example, a person with a special occupation, like doctor, chemist, and so on. Being a person with good moral characters or bad moral characters. These are things that we may know for sure, but they are not necessary. They can be changed. So, Kant had this idea of 12 categories, which are, as I said, are mentioned on page 136. And these are categories of our understanding. And whenever something comes from outside to our mind adds some of these 12, not all these 12, because some of them are alternatives. So, for example, in respect to relation, one of them can be added in respect to, for example, quantity or quality or modality. So some of these 12 will be added to the idea which we receive from outside, and then we understand it as a mixture of these two different things. The thing that we have taken from outside and the thing that we have added ourselves. So this was the idea of Kant. On the other hand, there were, and still there are, so there have been some Western philosophers in the past or also in the present who had the idea that we have no knowledge, no ideas independent from sensation. There is a famous statement by Epicurus that our mind is a white and empty tabula. It's like, for example, piece of paper, or like a tabula, like a tablet, which is free, totally empty, totally white. Nothing is mentioned there. And it is only after our encounter with the material world, with the physical bodies outside, that we take something, we understand something, and gradually our mind becomes filled with those ideas, and that empty tablet becomes gradually filled by data or information that we have received from outside. This idea, which is not very new, as I said, for example, Epicurus had this idea that there is nothing in our reason that is not taken from sensation. So it means that our reason and our mind was totally empty. Everything comes from outside. This idea is also repeated, accepted, recognized by some modern philosophers like John Locke, who had the same idea that our reason has nothing except from the sensation, our intellect has nothing except from our sensation, and also some other people. Of course, for them, it's possible that our mind makes some changes into the sensational ideas, but these are very simple changes, very minor changes, like just putting some ideas together or generalizing something. For example, in the external world, we see different flowers which are red. Then we generalize and come to a concept of redness. So redness does not exist outside. It's something that we have it in mind. But it is just generalization of the things that exist outside. So nothing more than this can happen to sensational ideas. But as we will see, those who are not empiricists have other understanding of this issue. And inshallah, we will shortly come to that. There have been some empiricists who were saying that all our understanding, all our mental ideas, all our knowledge can be based on sensation, but sensation for them was not only internal sensation, ordinary sensation. They included also internal spiritual sensations. But some of them excluded this and did not include internal sensations. So they themselves were different. For example, John Locke had the idea that sensations include also internal sensations. And Berkeley went even further and he said that there is no physical external world which is separate from us. Everything is a mental phenomenon and everything is in the mind of us or God. So for him, in a sense, all experiences become internal. Anyway, this is a general description of the ideas of those who believe in priority of sensation in respect to ideas. The author says that there are some objections. First of all, we start with the idea of people such as Descartes, who had the idea of innate knowledge. The author says that the idea of having some innate ideas when we are born without having any encounter with the world, it's something that we cannot accept, something that we have not sympathy with. So if everyone refers to his own memories, reflects on his own memories and on his own understanding, we'll find this idea very strange, to say that a child who is born, he has some intellectual knowledge, intellectual ideas at least, in his mind. So, for example, a newborn child must necessarily have some concepts such as figure, such as extension or continuity. This is, or about soul, This is something that is not acceptable, and we can deny this. The second problem is that if we say these ideas are innate and these ideas are part of our creation, we are created with these ideas, so the problem arises is that if we were created in another way, so we could have been able to understand in another form. You say we are created with these ideas. So what would be wrong if we suppose that we were created with some other ideas, some conflicting ideas, some ideas other than these, different from these? Why we should say that only because we are given this through the process of creation, so these must be truthful? Descartes himself noticed this problem, but he argued that because these are given by God, and God does not deceive us, so this knowledge, innate knowledge, these ideas must be truthful. But the problem is that before we could prove the existence of God and His qualities, we could not say something is truthful or not. And we cannot prove the existence of God without knowing that these ideas are truthful. You know, it's circular. We need to use the existence of God and benevolence of God, and that God does not deceive us, to prove that these innate ideas are truthful. But to prove the existence of God Himself and His qualities, we need these innate ideas. So you see, A relies on B and B relies on A. So this is circular. This does not work. We must have an argument, a proof to show that certain ideas are truthful. Just being created is not enough. So this is the second objection. The third objection is regarding the ideas of those people who believe that intellectual ideas are only outcomes of minor changes in sensational ideas. The author says that if the sensational ideas are changed, then we must lose them. Because when you combine two things, then you come to a new combination, and we no longer have those parts. Again, they're independent from the combination. If you have some, for example, pieces of wood and metal and put them together and make something, so you have them only in this combined form. You cannot have them separately again and in combination. This is a problem that make us think that our intellectual knowledge is much more than just putting something together. And there are many, the fourth objection is that there are many intellectual concepts and ideas which cannot be at all analyzed by combination of sensational ideas. They are different in their nature. For example, the concept of causality, which is a second intelligible, al-ma'gulat al-thaniya, which is philosophical, this does not exist as a physical or as a material body outside. There is fire which burns. But causality is not something that you can see or you can, for example, touch or smell or taste. This is something that we derive from the reality but cannot be referred at by finger. So this is something which is, inshallah, discussed, also will be discussed later. So we have some intellectual concepts which are very different in their nature from sensational ideas. And the last objection here is that the sensational ideas are important and are necessary for us to come to some knowledge about intellectual ideas. We do not want to deny that. We do not want to say that when we are created, we will have some intellectual ideas and then we will have some sensational ideas. No. We accept that the first things that a child understands are the things that he or she feels. Sensational ideas. This is okay if it is just a matter of time. But what we do not accept is that everything ends here. We say, firstly, we have sensational ideas. But secondly, our mind, our intellect works on them and brings something very, very different in nature after intellection. So we have secondary intelligibles which are totally different in their nature from the sensational ideas. So sensational ideas, according to time, are prior. But we cannot say everything ends here. Inshallah, we will continue this discussion in the next session. And after finishing this, we will talk about the priority of sensation or intellect in respect to tasdiqat, affirmations. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.